The Dave Damaschek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Damaschek.
Oh, Pittsburgh, PA in Studio 66. Never better than when the black and gold is here in the glow of the Mario Lemieux number 66 sweater. Hey, hi and hello. What do you got? Oh, look at that.
I forgot I wore
black and gold through and through.
I got my Penguin socks on today.
Excellent. You can take the man out of Pittsburgh, but you can't take the Pittsburgh socks off the man.
That's right, yeah.
Hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Damaschek Football Program. I hope all's well wherever you are. Seated to my immediate left here, we're going to talk about sports. We're going to talk about the game of life, that and much more, with a guy who I've been anxious to meet for, I don't know, a couple of years now. Pittsburgh-based comedian, Pittsburgh native, and now an international superstar in the world.
International superstar, that's right, yeah.
Steve Byrne, how are you, man?
Good to see you.
Oh, we're pleasure. Handshaking? Yeah. That's classy on the
right?
Podcast.
Yeah.
I like that. Before anything else, let me tell you, always amazing is Byrne's new documentary about the amazing Jonathan. It's released on All Things Comedy and on YouTube, and it's appearing in many festivals, and it is blowing up. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Tell us all about it.
Totally for free on YouTube. Just type in Always Amazing. It's a lot of people may or may not remember Jonathan. He was huge in the 90s, 2000s. One of the first comics to pop off of a new network, Comedy Central. Comedian, magician, wore a headband. And what I loved about him is all his magic was rooted in failure. And he was a better comedian than a magician, I believe. But sight gags, absolutely hilarious. And killing it, Vegas headliner. And eventually he was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy, which is a terminal diagnosis given to him by his doctors. You have a year to live. It's a degradation of your heart combined with diabetes and drug addiction. He's going to be a goner. So he's sitting there waiting.
Sounds funny.
Sounds great, yeah. But he's prepared to die, outlives expectations by another 2 to 3 years, says, I'm going to make a comeback to the stage. And I thought, as a fan and as a friend, what a great impetus for a documentary. I love documentaries. I love stand-up. I just thought, that'd be great. I'd love to see that. And then I just called him. I said, can I do this? He said, yeah. So I went ahead and did it. And here we are, 2 years later now.
Forgive the stealing of the title of the book, but it's amazing. That's an amazing story that you had the idea to do that.
Yeah.
And that it's gone so well. And you just sat down with a few days ago with our mutual pal, Adam Carolla.
Yes.
Who also... comedian-ish guy who now has veered into documentary making, and you're also you already shot a picture, right? Now you have a feature coming out early next year.
Yeah, I have a feature film coming out called The Opening Act. It's about every comedian's foray from that. You can see your life in front of you with like a safe corporate job, which happens to be in this film, but whatever it is, you could see yourself doing the rest of your life, but you know you have this internal, you got to pursue your bliss, your passion. And the whole film is about this kid that gets offered his first weekend emceeing at an A-list comedy club, which happens to be the Pennsylvania Improv, which is supposed to be the Pittsburgh Improv, but it's actually the Brea Improv. So the whole film takes place over 4 days, and Jimmy O. Yang from Crazy Rich Asian, Silicon Valley, plays a younger version of me. And the first half of the film is all the romanticism, blind optimism, and partying of hanging out with the feature act and being on the road for the first time. And then the back half of the film is all the isolation, solitude, and like sobriety that comes with warming up to this road-weary veteran that is played by Cedric the Entertainer. So the whole film's encapsulated over 4 days. You really get a real perspective of what it's like to be on the road and all three echelons, MC, feature, headliner. So it's all right there. And we've done a few screenings for like comedians, and they're all like, this is a really, really authentic perception of it. So I'm hoping I got it right. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I never know about people who are in a particular profession bellyache about the lack of authenticity.
Yep.
My old man and mother, doctor and a nurse, retired. Sit around and they'll watch like Grey's Anatomy and go crazy. Well, that would never happen. Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff happening over these 60 minutes is probably not realistic. But
yeah,
yes. fast. Now, you would never do that if it were in the E. All right, you know.
My wife watches that, and I sit there, and I just walk through, and I comment. I'm like, this is the most unluckiest hospital. There's explosions. Someone's charged with murder. People are each other nonstop. It's the worst work environment ever.
Yeah.
But she's hooked. Because it's a soap opera.
Well, and yeah, I mean, you know, it makes me feel as a prospective patient that, like, I wouldn't be getting top-notch care because they're distracted by, you know, by their behavior between the sheets, whatever they're doing, you know?
Well, as much as I, you know, throw my wife under the bus about watching that stuff, she'll be like, why are you watching a hockey game that happened 15 years ago? Mm. I'm like, because it means something to
you
me.
You still do that. That makes me feel much better about me because the YouTube provides.
Oh, God.
Oh, I mean, the world of old games that you can dig up on there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I spend an inordinate percentage of my free time doing that.
Highlights, all that stuff. I think the last one I watched was Lemieux's game when he scored 5 goals in Madison Square Garden. They gave him a standing ovation.
One of my 3 favorite Lemieux performances ever.
Here's the thing.
Weird to get choked up. Inappropriate as a grown man to get choked up watching something that happened 15, 20 years ago.
That's not as significant probably to the man himself, but but to me, it's everything. Like if I could do, like I did this doc on Jonathan, and if I, like a dream world, I tried 2 years ago before this doc came out, before this feature came out, and hopefully I can go back to ESPN. Like I just want to do a documentary on 1993. On Lemieux's journey in 1993, and I would call it 93-99-66 because he was going after that scoring title. He was going to break the record. Comes down with cancer. Still wins the scoring race, the title. And had they gotten past the Islanders, I think they could have three-peated. But this is the thing nobody talks about. That was the year the Pens and the Kings would have met in the finals. Gretzky versus Lemieux, and we never got to see it.
That's just because you and I haven't crossed paths. I talk about that endlessly. I still talk about that. And in fact, that was 25 years ago, 26 years ago.
But in a film, in a doc, in something nobody's talked, you know what I mean? Like nobody's publicly encapsulated that moment. And I think somebody needs to in a doc film.
First of all, the best Penguin season in the history of the Penguins, which is saying something when they've won 5 Stanley Cups in other seasons. I also, by the way, just wrote down as a side note, comes down with cancer. Is that the correct way? Do you come down with it?
Full blown.
Okay.
AIDS and then there's...
You come down with it. But yes, he
like it's Jordan's flu game.
He was able to transcend that and go on to almost glory. And I'm with you completely because not only had they survived the New York Islanders, one of the great upsets in our lifetime in sports history, we would have finally seen head-to-head 66-99, and I suspect that the Penguins would have made quick work out of that Kings team. The compelling series in between would have been Lemieux's homecoming up to Montreal, where he would have put on a show for the crowd. He struggled. He would get nervous early in his career when he would go back up home, but then he overcame that and really started to put in some of his greatest performances in the old Forum there. Yeah. I think he really shined on his way to the third straight Stanley Cup, and we would talk about that team. We would elevate that team into the stratosphere of the best teams in not just hockey, but in sports over the last half century or so.
Why is it, though, that he's not, like, there's so much made about, like, you know, this is why I don't watch ESPN anymore, is because they have all that symbiotic relationships that they got to promote and stuff, and it's nauseating to me. And the flu game, like, they talk about that endlessly. It's like, how about this guy? He beat cancer and his last radiation treatment. He's waiting at the airport, says, screw it, I'm going to charter a plane to go to Philly of all places, and put on a show. I don't know. It just, how has nobody really shined the spotlight on this guy? I think he's so underserved in the world of sports in general. I mean, to come out of retirement, I remember where I was when I got the phone call that he's coming back, and then he plays. Wasn't the Maple Leafs?
It was the Leafs. I was in the igloo that night. I was in the igloo when David Volek scored the goal over Tommy Barrasso.
I mean, three and a half years, right? He was gone for 3 years. I think he was gone for.
He, yeah, at least that, yeah, because he retires in 90, yeah, I think it was 96, and then in 99, I think is what the window was there. But, yeah, I mean, I always say, you know, I argue all the time, 66 is greater than 99. People push back. You only say that because you're from Pittsburgh. And they say, then why does Gretzky have all the records? I don't know. Emmitt Smith has all the running back records. Does that make him better than Sweetness or other guys you want to throw out there? Of course, numbers aren't everything. They're not the only gauge. The greatest injustice. And Josh Yoey of The Athletic back in Pittsburgh just wrote a piece about this, that the greatest injustice in MVP voting history in any sport is 1989. Gretzky, the darling of the media, moves to Los Angeles and makes hockey in LA more popular. And for some reason, because he does that, that means that he gets the MVP trophy over 66, who goes for 199 points.
Yeah.
Outrageous.
Just shy of the 215 benchmark.
That's right. Well, and by the way, he only played in 76 games, and he only played on the power play in a couple of those. And if I remember correctly, he gets hurt early in one of those. So really, he only played 73 games. Hey, Spaghetti, behind the glass there, New York Rangers guy. Too much hockey so far?
I love it.
You do?
We need more hockey.
Okay, and also you're a fan of comedians.
I am a big, big fan.
And you're
comedians.
A fan of Steve Burns. Don't be shy, fella.
You forced him into that, by the way.
I want to tell you. What's
you're a big fan of Steve Burns. Now he has to.
It would be embarrassing if he
has to. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. If he did one of those.
He's okay.
When did I say? Oh no. Yeah.
All right.
No. He's yes anding, right, Spaghetti?
I was just going to say that I've been to the Comedy Store quite a bit, but unfortunately have never been there a night that you've been performing. So
you missed
I have to
out.
Change that. Yeah.
You missed out big time.
No, let's go together, Spaghetti. Let you and me together.
I go quite a bit.
When the opening act comes out, it sounds like you're a little bit describing my story. I was in one of the corporate cubicles in Chicago, Illinois, and moved out here on a whim and got lucky with some stuff. Things broke right for me, but not nearly on the level that they are for you. You star in...
I don't have my own studio.
Well, yeah, now I have to, yeah, I know. Now we let any Tom, Dick, and Hans Zeus in here. But, you know,
I never got one of these where I worked. I never had a laminate.
Is that
so
good?
You're doing well, yeah.
Does that mean you've arrived when you need a laminate?
Yeah.
That's a good one. Again, Adam Carolla. Go back and listen to the Adam Carolla show on which a Burn here makes an appearance. And he does a recurring bit called Rich Man, Poor Man. Mm-hmm. The intersection between the richest and poorest.
Yeah.
Having a laminate at work. I think that would be, you know, there's no in between there.
Like you don't get a laminate when you tell jokes in a strip mall.
Right.
If
you got the third shift janitor thing, like you got it attached to your belt, like with on that string thing, your laminate. And if you're super rich, you have to get into the executive suites.
When you know you're super rich, especially in LA, you're invited to a party. Mm-hmm. Never been invited.
I haven't either.
When you start going to buy art, mm-hmm. like my friends that are super, they go buy art. Like I've been to a museum and see, I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that's art. And when you have two or three cell phones, I have one cell phone.
Or you have a lady or two on the side, or a fella or two on the side.
You got your side chick, yeah.
They have that. They sometimes do that. Does it count? Because when I was in college, I had that giant Jimi Hendrix poster where like the wires were all coming out of his hair in different colors. It seemed kind of artistic.
Poster is that different than...
Not as good.
Not as good, okay. No. All Spencer right. Gifts... is a lot different than going to Sotheby's.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I don't know. I'm not rich either. So what do I know about it?
I was talking to my buddy, and he was telling me he went over to James Burroughs' house. And James, you know.
Sure, directed
TV
everything.
TV director, everything. He has a Monet in his bathroom.
What? That's showing off.
That's
what that says to me.
Yeah.
This is how rich I am. It's in the place where you dispose of filth. And I have my Monet hanging in there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. Those are the differences. I don't know that I'll forget that.
Can I tell you something right now? One of my early reactions to you, watching you before meeting you and now seeing you face to face, you're one of the more handsome comedians I've met.
Well, is that true?
Do you feel that way?
No, I do not feel that way. No. I never kissed a girl till I graduated high school in Hampton High School. That's where I went to high school.
My story, too. Look at that. You and me, so much in common, you know?
Lived in Chicago for a while as well. I lived in Bucktown.
Yeah.
I did that for 2 years, and then I got Sullivan and Son. And after the first year when I got picked up, I was like, I got to move back. And here's another rich story, right? Okay, so Warner Brothers, you're on the lot, you're filming, right? And, you know, it's Big Bang Theory, Two Broke Girls, Two and a Half Men at the time, Ellen. You know, there's a ton of sitcoms being filmed there, and Sullivan and Son. You go outside these gorgeous sound stages, and you see Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Porsches, Range Rovers tinted out. Gord, you come to this set of Sullivan and Son. Our cast parking looked like a teacher's faculty parking. It was a Corolla, a Prius. Roy Wood Jr. used to ride his Huffy there, chain his Huffy up, and he would take the seat and front wheel in. I'm like, dude, we're on the
Warner Brothers
lot.
This is embarrassing. This reflects poorly on me as the star of the show.
But we used to...
Can't you rent a nice car?
We used to throw the football because you're in this sound. It's just, you know, it seems exciting. It is exciting, but it's claustrophobic at the end of the day. You want to get out and see some sunshine. We used to launch a football outside our soundstage. And Owen Benjamin, who's 6'7", almost killed Clint Eastwood. He could throw a football 70 yards. I mean, these things were darts. He's a big guy.
Oh, I know those ball, the ones you're talking about.
Just chucking it. And I remember Clint Eastwood was around this corner, and this football, I mean, Clint Eastwood was talking this way. It went like that. Had he seen it? I mean, it was probably 2 feet away from killing him. The guy's 80.
What a story that would have been, though. Oh, that would be kind of worth the limited jail time he would have done for that.
Oh, we would have been canceled in a heartbeat, for sure.
that would have been worse. Owen Benjamin's in the clink, but worse, we got canceled.
We got canceled.
Yeah.
He shattered Ellen DeGeneres' golf cart window because the assistant was coming around the bend, and he drilled this thing dead on. Pow! Shattered it. So we were told you can't throw the football anymore. And then we used to turn the Sullivan and Son set into an actual bar. So when the audience left, we actually hooked up kegs to the taps.
What a banner idea.
Brought out the whiskey. The jukebox that was on the set actually worked. We plug it in and only played country music, like old school country. So it was pretty fun. And we would just take the golf carts out at night and, like, you know, try to, you know, like that Jurassic Park area where the Jeep is. We would go back there and, like, try to, you know, like do 360s and turn the carts over and stuff. If there were cones set up for a shoot the next day on the lot, we would run over all the cones, just get hammered. And every Wednesday when we came in, there was a notice from security. You got to stop. You got to get out. You can't stay here any longer. But every week we just party because it was like, I don't know when this is going to end, so I'm going to have as much fun as possible.
Of course, yes, yeah. Especially when you do that. There's nothing I bellyache. I think it's in my in fact, Chris Wessling and I were talking a few days ago from around the NFL, and I said somehow in passing my list of grievances is long, and he said, you've just stumbled onto the name of your autobiography. But I among the many things I bellyache about most frequently are the people who are doing things like that, are in those positions and somehow can't enjoy them. If you can't have fun for that, if you can't wring a little bit of joy out of that process, then shame the devil and get out.
Yeah, I think there's probably like an anxiety that comes.
Sure, of course.
Of like, oh my God, I got to do this. But the greatest advice I ever got was from Billy Gardell. Because he was next door.
Another peach from the city of Pittsburgh.
The
as
greatest.
Nice a guy as you can come across.
What I noticed about Billy Gardell, this is what he would do. He was on the set of Mike and Molly, and we were literally a door down. So as they were wrapping up their season, we were starting our season. So there was a few times where he'd come over and come say, hey. And there was a moment in time where he was kind of hanging out on our set quite a bit during his downtime. Like, man, Billy's around a lot. This is kind of cool. It's great to have him around and just check it in. What I learned was that their craft services and Mike and Molly was like just fruit and water, and ours was like an eighth grader's paradise. It was candy, it was donuts, it was pizza. It was like a roller rink party. And so Gardell would come over, and they were kind of trying to keep him, you know, in shape, and he was doing the best he could, but he'd come over and he'd just snack over at our place and then he'd go back over and tape over there. So I thought,
Yin's watched the game on Sunday. You seen Roethlisberger pull it out again against the Brownies. He is such a nice guy.
Oh. Right?
Anytime I run into him, he's always delightful to
he's
him. And our other connection, shout out to one of the nicest people in the broad entertainment industry, Randy Bauman, the king of
the greatest.
There's not a comedian almost legitimately in America who's touring around who doesn't sing songs about the greatness of Bill Crawford and Randy Bauman there on that 102.5
yeah.
WDVE.
Val Porter, that whole crew. Every time you go there, it's one of those few markets as a touring comic where in the 80s you would go to a market and you'd go on the radio, the Wacky Morning Show or whatever, and you would sell out that weekend. And there's very few markets these days that the radio station still has resonance, and DVE is certainly one of them. I'd say top three in the country in terms of like you go on DVE and you'll do really well.
I'm not sure exactly how to articulate the measurement on that, but I think it's the biggest morning show in terms of percentage of population in that town of any yeah. morning show in the country. It was that a couple of years ago, at least.
But even when you're there, you realize how important the Steelers are because they are talking black and gold 365, 24/7, nonstop. It is nonstop in that city.
I call in every week when football season's going. I love kibitzing. I tell those guys every time, every year, this is the highlight of my professional life to be talking on DVE radio on the morning show with you guys, getting to talk about Pittsburgh Steelers and black and gold related matters. It's a great thrill. I'll tell you that. A lot of things jump to mind. Craft services is some of the most surreal stuff that in my time. Out here.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I kind of had an out-of-body experience. I was working on the Man Show, and I remember looking over at the craft services table.
Yeah.
And it was they had the Juggy Girls who jumped on trampolines. It was a different time.
Oh, I remember.
And it was listen, it was satire. And it was sad. That's true.
That's the excuse, right? How crazy is that show
it
probably
kind of was.
10 years old?
Oh, more than
maybe
that.
Maybe 15?
Yeah. No, more than that. It was it debuted 20 years ago. I just talked with Carolla last week about
really?
That. He went into a story about those early days of starting it up. Yeah, 99 to 02, I guess.
June 16th, 99.
Wow. Okay. I'm getting older, but
yeah. Well, we referred to Lemieux in the garden with the five goals as 10, 15 years ago. That was in fact 93. That was 26 years ago, but I know it's really grim, but I remember there were two Juggy girls standing there. There were three little people, three guys that were in a bit and Gary Busey, and they were all just standing there. Talking and everything, and I
how's that not your screensaver?
And I said, and I remember saying to the guys I was with, I said, "This, I've made it to Hollywood. And I'm over the moon now." Almost killing Eastwood. Now, see, I have to tell you stories too, because the Eastwood story is grand for Owen Benjamin. I hate to one up it, but in honor of Black and Gold and the Penguins and so on, once in the early days of the Kimmel Show, I know the audience may have heard this story before. Bear with me. I used to sit up in Kimmel's office before the show and working on the monologue. And I said, you must ask him, because early on, one of the guests was Wayne Gretzky. And I said, bring up to him why that he's the darling of the media and Lemieux never gets his due. And I think my longstanding conspiracy theory is it's because Gretzky is passive aggressive. Lemieux would endlessly gush. Oh, so flattering to be compared to Wayne Gretzky.
Right, right.
When Gretzky was asked, never would return the favor. It's always about Gordie Howe or some other jive. So Kimmel asks him. One of our writers says that Lemieux, who do you think is the best of all time? He asks him.
Yeah.
So, Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr. Yeah, so many great ones. You know, so many great ones. And he says, "What?" One of our writers says Mario Lemieux. Mario's great too. So then they continue the interview and end it. And Gretzky comes back into the green room afterwards with his publicist in tow, and they're just standing there for a minute waiting to leave. And I go up to Wayno and I say, "Hey, why didn't you mention Lemieux when you were asked about that?"
Yeah,
I'm the writer and that mentioned that. He said, "I mentioned him. We talked about him." I said, "No, but he had to bring him up to you. Why couldn't you mention 66 when asked about?" And he said, well, I did talk to him, and I think Mario's great, and so on and so forth. And his publicist is standing there the whole time, and she's grabbing at his elbow, like, let's go, Wayne.
Yeah.
Mr. Gretzky has to go now. And he walks, and they get about 20 feet away from me.
Yeah.
They're through the double doors of the green room to head out. And I say, for those who don't know, goons, everybody knows what a goon is in hockey. His old goon was Dave Semenko.
Mm-hmm.
And as he goes, I go, hey, Wayno, Semenko's not here for you tonight.
You said that to Gretzky?
He turned around. He turned around like, what? Yeah. Who? What is this potbelly dope? What? He turns around and his publicist kind of is pulling him away. And the showrunner arm bars me and pulls me away and says, what the hell are you doing? You can't get into fights with the guests like that. And he goes off into the night. But I still say,
think about
what could have happened if he and I go to fisticuffs.
Yeah.
So he beats me up. He beats me to a pulp. So what? I did it in honor of 66. What better cause? You know? But by the way, that's worst case.
Yeah.
What if I lick him?
Yeah.
Then statues are erected. Then when you land in the Pittsburgh airport, it's George Washington, Franco making the Immaculate Reception, and Damashek with 1 foot on top of a defeated 99.
They just put they mold your head on the T-Rex. And then Gretzky is underneath the T-Rex foot. That's what it is.
Or he's between my jaws. Yeah. 99 stuck in between my jaws for all of time. So
that is awesome, by the way.
I was ready to go. If it was time for me to take my beating, if it was time for me to meet my maker, so be it. Bring it, 99.
What do you think the chances are you win?
He's not he's a delicate fella.
Yeah.
You know?
Still a pro athlete, though.
Yeah.
Doesn't fight.
Not known.
I think he got two fights maybe in his career.
Was it that many? He fought Neil Broughton is what I remember.
Yeah.
Another cupcake. You know, although 66 wasn't exactly stout when it came to drop the gloves. He did. I was at the game, his first home game, after he scored against the Bruins on his first shift.
Yep.
Takes the puck off the stick of Norris Champeen, one of the great defensemen of all time. Takes the puck off the stick of one Raymond Bourque. Goes in alone on Pete Peters, I believe the reigning Vezina Trophy champ. Goes in on him, shows him the backhand, and finds glory at the back of the net. I jumped around in my living room with my sister Amy. Yeah. Mo Damashek, our mother, was summoning us. Dinner's ready. And we said, we're going to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, like 6-7 years later, we did.
Yeah. That's great. But here's the thing that I will always say about Gretzky and Lemieux, the difference. Gretzky's highlights are boring.
That is
they
correct.
Look like anybody could do it, but he did it in a way where not everybody could do it. There was just like this calculated suaveness to him. Lemieux did things no one else did. He did things no one else will ever do. I mean, that scoring off the faceoff, I think that's one of the most, and he's looking up at the press box afterwards, after the bet. I think, like, these are things you are never going to see again.
There is they are obviously two great scores, but they are kind of apples and oranges, because Gretzky, to watch him, and this predates you, I assume, Spaghetti, right? Do you remember even Gretzky as a Ranger?
Very little.
Really? You're that young?
Oh, I remember like his retirement, like his ending with the team. I remember watching it. It was like a day game.
Weirdly, yeah, against the Penguins.
Hands with Jagr.
Yeah, Jagr was out there glad handing with him.
Passing
after the
torch.
Fact. Yeah. Gretzky, the thing that would stand out about him was that he didn't stand out. You would watch for 60 minutes, and at the end of the game, what was striking was like, wow, how did he have 5 points? He had 2 goals? Because every opportunity he got, he cashed in on, to his credit. And he was really effective, you know, coming, just getting inside the blue line and making nice plays. He did happen to have Jari Kurri and Mark Messier and Glenn Anderson and Paul Coffey and so on, some of the all-time great players surrounding him from a very early age. And his scoring totals are very, I mean, largely owed to, I mean, he was the best player in the league at that point, but everybody who had a heartbeat was putting up 120 points a year. Dale Howard, Chuck, put up huge numbers. The era of, like, 81, just so happens to be 81 to about 85. The scoring is off the charts. It's sort of like the baseball when everybody was hitting home runs for those for that half decade or so. But yes, he was great, but he was not a sniper, so he doesn't have a lot of highlight reel goals. He was just effective in cashing in on the percentage of opportunities that he had. Conversely, 66 was the only player on the Penguins for his first handful of years.
Yeah.
I mean, he was shifting with Doug Shedden and Warren Young and guys like that. He would, and you never weren't aware of his presence on the ice. And he would lug the puck from his own blue line all the way down to the other team's goal line consistently, and with guys banging on him the whole way.
Literally hanging on his back. I mean, Gretzky's highlights are milestones. That's what you watch.
That's right.
It's his thousandth point. It's his, whatever.
You're right.
It's just, it's highlights. I wore the hell out of those VHS tapes. They give away games, Mario the Motion Picture, all that stuff. And the best memory I have of one of those VHS tapes, when I was obsessed with Rob Brown. I thought he was cool. He was dating Alyssa Milano at the time.
I don't know why we thought he was cool with that long.
He had the hair at the back, right?
The flaxen haired mullet.
Windmill, and go like this and do that. And I used to do that after my goals. And in one of those VHS tapes, I think it was the 89 recap VHS tape, they spent a day with downtown Robbie Brown, and he's in like his Trans Am, and the camera guy's in the back seat, and he's filming Rob like an artistic shot through the rearview mirror, and Rob Brown is singing Every Rose Has Its Thorn to himself on the way to practice, and it's so funny. And I used to think, back in the day, I thought it was the coolest thing. I'm like, man, he likes Poison too. This guy's awesome.
I'm glad he found Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh found him.
That's right. Yeah. Brett Michaels.
Yeah, right.
Pittsburgh, there you go.
Oh, yeah. He loves his black and gold as well. Oh, yeah. 89. Yeah, that was when the Flyers rallied to beat them. But that was one of the great Lemieux performances, too. Game 6 when he gets the HT in the first period.
Oh, yeah.
Humiliates Ron Hextall.
Hextall comes out and
just shames Ronnie Hextall again. You know?
Yeah.
Boy, he tortured those Patrick Division goalies.
Oh, yeah.
He owned Pete Peters and Bob Froese and Ronnie Hextall and so on and so forth. So what advice do you have for anybody? Because you talk about the process, because like I say, in my 20s, I'm sitting in a cubicle and miserable, and I happen to be dating a woman. Actually, it's funny.
Wait, what? I happen to be dating a woman?
Well, that was rare. You know,
kind of happens.
Well, once a decade or so is about my rate. Like, I dupe one woman to spend time with me. Yeah. And then it's like, well, you know, don't push your luck. Right. And so
you're a good looking guy. What are you talking? I mean, were you like obese when you were younger or something? I mean, everything symmetrically is
there. You
think so? Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm semitically okay. Like, I'm semitically palatable, but you know.
Like, you're a Pittsburgh 9, like an LA.
You think so? I was trying. Like, spaghetti, what do you think I am?
I actually agree. I think that you have a lot going for you, but you like to do the opposite, like the self-deprecation.
If I could lose 30, I'd be all right.
What are you talking about? 30? Where would you lose it from? How old are you?
59 years of age. 59 years young. 59 years young. When you start going with the young instead of old in that phrase, that means you're officially old.
I'm 44, but I think we both have a good metabolism comparatively to a lot of guys. When you go back home to Pittsburgh, you run into your friends, you're like, oh. I'm a rough.
Well, the hairlines. I mean, I have a flesh yarmulke back here.
Yeah.
At the back of my head, but relatively speaking, you know, I've still am mostly dark haired. I have most of my head of hair.
Yeah.
And because of the wonders of science now with that topic stuff that you can shake on your head, none the wiser. The public doesn't even know. You know, it's a 21st century toupee.
Yeah.
By the way, Bill Burr was in here where you sit a couple of months ago, and he regaled us with a story as we're talking hockey about Bill Crawford taking him to a game once, and Bill Burr was apparently very upset to see on the Wall of Fame or whatever they call it there, Ulf Samuelsson is included on that.
Well, he's from Boston. Of course he's going to hate Ulfie. Yeah.
It's the most overstated thing. I mean, Ulf Samuelsson at full speed collides with Cam Neely.
Yeah.
They're far filthier hits that I've seen in my lifetime than that
one.
And Crawford advised me. I said, hey, I was talking to Bauman and Crawford, talking Steelers on the radio, and they said at the end, I said, I'm going to talk to your pal Bill Burr, and they said, just it's not a joke to him.
Oh yeah, it's
to
not.
Get into him about Bruins related stuff. I wouldn't tease the Bruins or anything.
Yeah.
While you're doing it, and I said, well, now that you've told me that, now I'm required to bring it up.
And within, I almost fought Gretzky. This is not going to, yeah.
Spaghetti, right? I mean, it was literally as we were sitting down. Yeah, I was like, I've been told I'm not allowed to talk to you about Ulf Samuelson and Cam Neely. And it legitimately got us off on a bad foot.
Yeah, a lot
it
of really,
well, here's my favorite Bill.
I can't do a Boston accent. He's like, I hate you Pittsburgh guys. Well, who do you think you are?
You stole our colors. Yeah. We had the black and gold. I know, Bill. He is the same offstage as he is on stage. So we're both New York comics at the time, both kind of, if I was like a freshman, he'd be a sophomore or junior, right, on the scene. And we both love going to hockey games. We both love going to, we'd go to the Yankee games, right? It's like, yeah, even though I'm from Pittsburgh, we got to go to Yankee Stadium. So we'd go on our off time. And so we're in this section. We got good seats. And this foul ball comes up and this guy catches it. And this little kid goes to it too. But the guy catches it, right? So the guy turns around, right? Everybody's booing him. Boo, boo, give it to the kid, give it to the kid. He's not giving it to the kid. Kid sits down, and he stands up. He's doing one of these things. And then Burr and I are like, give it to the kid, give it to the kid. The whole section is give it to the kid for like 2 or 3 minutes straight. The guy stands up. He makes a presentation about it. He holds up the ball. He goes, are you happy now? And he hands it to the kid. Everybody cheers. Everybody's clapping, right? It's a nice moment. Burr stands up. He's like, you caved, you... You should have kept the ball. Hey, smoke this. Everybody else is smoking it. It was so funny. I mean, he had the whole section. He's performing for the section now, and he went on for another 2 minutes just drilling this guy. It was great. It was absolutely – if you have an opportunity to go to a live sporting event with Bill Burr, go.
I'd love to do that because he really does seem, because we have mutual friends, and from what I gather, he is, like we talked about, he is somebody who is enjoying the opportunities that his life has, that his profession has given him. From what I can tell, he just travels around every free couple of days that he has. He's at Baton Rouge for a night LSU football game. One time he's at the Rose Bowl. He goes and sees golf and stuff, right? And auto racing and all that kind of stuff.
Two of my best sporting memories were when I was in Chicago. I was doing a thing with the Dilemma. Vince Vaughn and Kevin James were filming there. And Burr and I were out there doing a show with Vince. That's what it was. And we rented out the United Center, basically. So we did the scenes, and then they're like, do you want the ice? And I was like, yeah.
Wow.
And so the equipment manager hooked us up with all old Blackhawk equipment and stuff. So I'm like wearing patches, skates and stuff. And it was great. We got to play the United Center. We had the whole rink to ourselves. And then the other one was we did Lemieux Fantasy Camp together. We did a show. We did stand up during the dinner. And then we got to play with them for the weekend. And that was just single, like, to receive a pass from Mario Lemieux, and then there's a moment where you're just sitting there like, this is, like, all your childhood. I remember I cried after the first game, and my wife was like, why, you didn't cry on her wedding? I'm like, yeah, you don't know what this means to me. This is, like, my childhood is bubbling and emanating.
I've only known you for, like, 5 years. This is like a quarter century, lady.
Yeah.
I thought we knew each other.
Did you score 5 goals 5 different ways on New Year's Eve against the Devils? Get the f*** out of here. So that was like literally one of the greatest memories I ever had. And just
he's
just so regal and classy. And it's like those things that, you know, he does the fantasy camp, right? And then you finish and you go to the hotel bar and all the guys are from all over the world here to play with, you know, Trottier and Recchi and everything. Recchi drilled me straight up drilled me into the boards and I fell down and he is just laughing and he's just skating off. And I was like, man, that was so cool. I got drilled by Mark Recchi. But we go to the bar afterwards.
And you know who's always there, which is weird, and I've talked to this guy about it directly? The guy who is the connective tissue with some of the biggest sports celebrities and movie celebrities, Ty Domi. the goon from the Rangers. Why? I'm like, why? I talked to him once for about a half an hour and said, why? I mean, no offense, but why you? Why is Mark Wahlberg have you everywhere he goes? And why does Mario Lemieux have you in his in the owner's box constantly? And he just, you know, a pleasant,
just
kind
of guys.
Unassuming, delightful kind of a guy. Yeah.
Even at that fantasy camp, we got talking and stuff after the show, and he was teaching me how to fight. And he goes, so you grab it like this, and you cock your fist, and he's looking at me, and he's getting it. Uh-huh. I'm like, dude, we don't have to do this. We're good. We don't have to do this. But I remember in that hotel, everybody would go there, and Mario, I don't know if I should be saying this or whatever, but it's just such a nice thing. He, you know, everybody's drinking, running up a tab. There's a ton of Canadian players there. I mean, the bar bill must have been. And
old hockey players, boozing, yeah.
Lemieux gets up and walks out, and then people are like, you know, around – Lemieux leaves probably 11:30, and then it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and people are like, all right, I got to set up my tab. He already took care of it. Like, he's just –
He's the best.
He doesn't have to do that. He didn't even have to be at the – I mean, if you go to somebody else's fantasy camp, I'm sure they're probably going home right after the on-ice stuff or whatever, but this guy, he hung out the whole time, took pictures and everything. It was just such a – just a class act.
He, the one thing, if I could get time with him, because he does seem so adverse to self-praise and all that kind of stuff, I would just like to sit with him and say, I have my list of my 20 favorite goals of yours, and now let's just go through what you think are your, because every professional athlete has that crazy recall. They can tell you super small details about they remember their whole careers. It's a strange thing, or at least that's true of football guys. And I suspect that's true with 66. He seems like the sort who would remember what happened in game 4 in 92 and why Dominic Hasek was able to stop him on the breakaway before they got, you know, I would love to go through that beat for beat with him. That would be the documentary I would want. There's a larger, greater story to be told.
Yeah.
I would just be, you know, for out of self-interest, would love to hear what he thinks about those, because those are, for better or for worse, those memories are right up there for me with
burning the hard drive.
It's like I have four kids, so it goes like, I mean, it would be rude to say the birth of my first is one, but then the one that he scored when he took the puck off of Shel Samuelson's stick and then skated down and he turned Doug Crossman around and then he flipped it over Hextall's. That's number two for me.
Yeah.
Then the birth of my second child. But I'm not going to do the whole list, but I mean, something like that. I would.
It's so funny because I think like about my father. My father, still alive, I'm not talking about him past tense, but a great guy. He got me into hockey. He got me on skates at 5 or 6 and started playing. I think I've seen him cry once in my life. My daughter and son have seen me cry so much. Like when Crosby, remember that week when Crosby batted the goal in, right?
Yeah.
And then the next, I think it was like 3 or 4 days later, he does it again. It was right around spring training, and there were all these baseball jokes, whatever. He hit it in. I just kind of like, for some reason, I got teary-eyed in that moment. My daughter's like, are you okay? I'm just like, I'll never see that again. Like, he just did it, and the odds of that happening are so few and random. And I know he played baseball back in the day, but to see him do it again, I think it was against the Devils the second time he did it. I was just, I don't know, I kind of got emotional. Just like, I'm never going to see this again. Enjoy every second you have with Crosby. Enjoy every game and opportunity you have to watch 87. Because at some point, it's going to be past tense. And it's almost like all those years I grew up in my basement watching Lemieux and Ron Francis and Yager. And there's a minute left in the game and they're down by goal. And you know this is must-see TV because they're going to tie it up. Somehow they're going to do it. And they'd always do it. And I look back with such fondness of my childhood back in those days. And I think the same thing right now with this run of Malkin in 87.
It's funny you say that. First of all, this has been a very Pittsburgh
season. I'm so sorry. I know.
I like I love it. Yeah. Spaghetti, right? This is this is fine by you, right?
Great. Yeah.
He's always my gauge. He would say like that. This is not good.
But so this is a show where I forget I'm the producer because I'm just like listening to just two guys telling stories. I'm like, oh, okay, I have a job to do.
I mean, I, you know, when he on his retirement, his last game in the igloo, which we thought was the last time we would see him before he then returned. But when he couldn't get it past, I don't remember who was in goal for the Flyers, but he couldn't get past him. He was getting some shots. And with about 2 minutes to go, the entire crowd sensing the moment, the Pens were likely to lose the series. We weren't going to see 66 again. And they started the Mario chant. I started to get misty. And I knew what was going to happen. I knew going in that this was going to be a tough one for me.
Yeah.
And I literally drew the shades, and it's true. I said, people are like, "You want to come over and watch the game?" And I'm like, no. This isn't about fun. What are you
like a bad detective? You draw the shades, you pour the shot.
I was sitting Shiva,
looking at you.
Yeah, I was sitting Shiva in advance of the retirement.
That's so great.
And the chanting and everything, and then he gets it and he pokes it around off the dashers and comes in alone, and he comes and he walks in and he scores the goal, and I wept. I wept and I thanked the heavens that was who I got to cheer for.
Yeah.
In my formative years. And to your point, 87 then comes along and Malkin and so on. And when Anthony Davis was traded to the Lakers, mm-hmm. I keep a running tab on this sort of a thing. Lakers centers, mm-hmm. you know, you have Kareem and Shaq and Wilt and Anthony Davis now. I still say maybe the Penguins center iceman is the single greatest position for one franchise in any sport you can think of.
Wow.
Because you can go with like Dodgers starting pitchers is a good one, and like Bears middle linebackers.
Yankee center field, you think?
Yankee center fielders. But that one doesn't run as deep as you think. But yes.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that might be the number one.
Wow. Yeah. I think, yeah.
I like lists. So who's your list of handsome comedians? Who's more handsome than Steve Byrne? Because
handsome comedian.
Well, Carolla likes to claim that one. And he by the way, he's not kidding around about that.
Yeah.
I think if you combine, like, what's his name? Like, I'm not going to name any names. But, well, I recall him mentioning Dane Cook at one point. He's like, he might be handsome. But, like, if you're balancing funny and looks,
yeah.
I think I got to be at the top. I think I got to be number one in
Carolla's,
that.
Carolla's, oh.
This was a while ago. Okay. This isn't modern day Carolla. This isn't 50-something Carolla. This was more 40-something Carolla. But I don't know with that assessment. I mean, Bill Burr might have him beat, although when he had...
I'll tell you who the most handsome comic is right now.
I'm going to put you down. I'm going to put you down on my list. Colin Jost. He does stand-up.
He's on Weekend Update.
I know.
Engaged to Scarlett Johansson.
They're engaged now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeesh.
He's not only just handsome, but he's just a great guy. He's a hard worker. He's absolutely hilarious. And I don't know. He used to open for me on the road. And we did a show together. this is so funny how, like, people are smitten with this guy. We go do this show in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're doing morning radio because we're doing a two-man show. And this is literally 2 years ago, maybe three. And 15 years ago. So we sit down. And this guy is absolutely, like, I can't believe Colin Jost is in my studio. So he's like, "Colin, so you went to Harvard, you wrote for the Lampoon. Please tell me about this." And Colin's like, "Yeah, it's historic." And he's telling him, he's like, "And then you were a writer at SNL, right out of college at Harvard. Please tell me what that's like." And Colin tells him about it. And he goes, "And then you became head writer at SNL at the same time you're on Weekend Update. Please tell me about this." Colin's got some great stories telling him all this stuff. And he goes, "And Steve, you're Mexican, right?" I was like, that's what you got for me? I'm Mexican. And we could not stop laughing. But people have this, Colin has an aura about himself. I don't know.
Interesting. Spaghetti says that was his dad.
Yeah, his pops was my teacher in high school. His dad went to Brown.
Really?
Yeah, he taught us like Cisco networking in Staten Island. That's where Colin's from. Really smart.
Yeah.
His dad was really young too, but ultra smart family.
He's an incredibly smart guy. Really good. Just like his brother, Casey. He writes for Impractical Jokers. Great guy.
Hmm.
Good-looking guy. His mom was helped with the firefighters after 9/11.
Hmm.
She was there to help them out. I forget. I think she's a nurse or something like that. But
by the way, that makes me think of John Stewart. He would be high on that list. He's considered handsome,
Stewart's
right?
A handsome guy. Noah on The Daily Show. Trevor Noah.
Uh-huh.
He's handsome.
Yeah, he is. Right. Right.
Yeah, I think there's some handsome guys, yeah. I would never put myself... Look, I don't consider
myself... Guess what? You don't have to because you want to be modest. You're there.
No,
etch it into the concrete.
What I hear, like when okay, so not to bring this back, but when the Amazing Jonathan doc, when we put it on YouTube, it's like, do we enable the comments section on this? Because that's, you know, it's a dumpster fire, right? So I was like, look, let's live and die by the sword. Let's see what happens. So we put it up there, and it's overwhelmingly positive, which is nice. But the negative comments I see are when it's like, Steve looks like an Asian Elon Musk. Steve looks like if Seth MacFarlane and Kevin Spacey had a baby. Like, that's what I'm getting. So it's like, I don't think I'm that handsome. No.
I don't know if there were that many lies in what you said. No. So what would you say? Because that is something that people are, I always talk about that people fancy the idea of moving to Los Angeles.
Sure.
And you've had this experience, I'm sure. And, I'll admit it, and it's not me being falsely modest. Dumb luck. Well, Dave, what advice do you have? How do you get to do this? Dumb luck. I can't advise you on the sequence of events that got me to here. But most people are hustlers. I have tried to work hard over the years as well. But it seems like there's so many people who move out here because it seems like it would be fun to do. But as you mentioned about your feature coming up,
right,
is that it is still people, when people ask about the mansion, was that crazy? Were you guys just drunk the whole time and doing what I like? No, we would go to work.
Working
it's still
hard,
a job. It's a fun job, but it's nevertheless a job.
Yeah.
What would you advise anybody who is sitting at that cubicle right now who says, I'd like to try this, to get into the business? What counsel would you give them? Stay away? We're already full? Or is there any?
Well, I think that there is some credence to that, because every time there's traffic, I'm like, there's at least 1,200 people that are not getting a call back. Go back to Minnesota, you know? But I think, honestly, if you're really thinking, man, I should try, you know, there's no try. It's like, I got to do this. If you have that burning desire, like, I got to do this, then go ahead and you got to do it. Because that desire, I always think it's not just working hard. It's like working hard and smart, but also having some semblance of talent. But I think that I'm definitely not as talented as some other comedians. I know that. I'm definitely not as talented as some other writers. I know that. But I've always known I will just work my ass off towards everything. So everything I've ever had, from Sullivan and Son to the documentary that I released on YouTube for free. I mean, I just, you know, even this feature, like, I've never had a development deal. I've never had anything. But I'll tell you this. The whiskey at the bar tastes a lot sweeter when you got a lot of dirt underneath your fingernails. And that's the one thing I have. I'm not a chin stroker from Harvard. I'm not one of these Ivy League writers that's going to get hired in the writer's room. I'm just somebody that went to Kent State, and I'll work my ass off. And that's the only thing. I think, to be honest with you, it's Pittsburgh's a big part of it, because Pittsburgh's such a hard-working, blue-collar kind of town. And I, as much as I like to think it's in my DNA, I still think that just my upbringing in Pittsburgh, the guys I grew up around, even friends when you go back home now, like, nobody lets you get too high on your horse. They'll always bring it down, right back down to earth. So
I, by the way, as a vain person, I'm a little offended when my friends, like, don't you guys want to hear about, like, what I'm doing at the NFL? Cool, what I did. I was just at the Super Bowl, but I was on the sideline.
But don't you think, I mean, I think you sell yourself short, though, too, because obviously you're very talented. You have a great way of discerning.
Hot belly.
But voice, in terms of how to be a conduit of information in a very entertaining way, in a fun way. But I think that, don't you feel that that the work, not only with the talent, has gotten you where you are?
Yes, being talented, to quote Dalton in Roadhouse, opinions vary. But yes, that's exactly right.
We're not going to beat our chest and say we're but I think if you have some semblance,
you're
of
right.
And
it's on one hand, it's vexing from the perspective if you go to bars. I remember early on when I was out here, my pal David Feeney and I would be in there and we'd wring our hands. When's it our turn? When's it our moment to get to have some fun? These 24-year-old guys talking to the beautiful women and convincing them and themselves, because they don't see any flaw in their plan, like, I'm going to reshape show business with this movie idea I have. I have a different thing. And they sell this nonsense, but they do no work to make it happen.
Of course, yeah.
That's what very often, it's the land of dreamers, Los Angeles. It's the land of rudderless losers who think, like,
maybe I'll make it, because that at least seems like a fun job. And I'm not calling everybody losers who takes their shot. I'm talking about people who come out and do nothing to make it happen, who don't do the work to write all the time. And Jimmy Kimmel, will gave that advice to me 20 years ago.
Yeah.
If you outwork everybody, no one can ever point at you, whatever level you're at. If you're running the thing, nobody can ever say, oh, boss man. I haven't gotten to be a boss man yet, but if I ever do, I will maintain that work ethic, you know?
I've always heard that about, like, Kimmel, of how
very
driven and determined he is, and how smart he is as well. I've heard that from numerous people.
He is smart.
When I think of Kimmel, though, the worst TV set I've ever had was on Kimmel's show.
Really?
Remember Dave Rath?
Sure.
Obviously, he's a very prominent, relevant talent.
I don't like his football allegiances, but I believe him.
Well, he was the talent booker.
Right.
And I had just gotten, like, the Variety's top 10 comics. This is a long time ago. And I'd done it, and he'd seen me, and he booked me. And the thing is, I'd just done the Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn. And, like, 3 months later, I was doing Jimmy Kimmel Live, when it was Jimmy Kimmel Live. And I didn't have another great 5 minutes. So I was like, oh, what am I going to do? And I'm just trying to slap this together. I should not have done it, to be honest with you. And I remember Rath, because this is before, remember when, if this is the stage, they put the comedians in the corner.
I remember exactly.
So you got to perform out here, and then you got the whole rest of the audience like, well, how am I going to? And so they're like, just perform for the cameras. And I was like, oh, my God. And I was just stressed out. I didn't know what to do. And Dave Rath, literally, they go, 1 minute till air. Dave Rath goes, by the way, if you're bombing, just keep doing your set. Don't acknowledge it. Don't talk about you bombing. I was like, have a lot of people bomb? He's like, just don't talk. Just do your set. I'm like, but have a lot of people. It's like, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And it was in my head. I just kept hearing Dave Rath, if you're bombing, just keep doing your set. If you're bombing,
great,
keep doing
advice.
Your set. And I walk out and I'm like, within 30 seconds, I'm like, I'm bombing. I guess I got to keep doing my set. And I'm just eating a plate of it was so bad. I don't even think Kimmel came over to. I think he was just like, hey, thanks for coming, Steve.
Can we get him off?
Oh, it was bad. It was bad. And then they thought I dropped an F-bomb. They thought I said the F-word. I know I did not say. I said forget it because I had 1 minute left, and I was getting ready to do the next joke, but I had already burned through enough time.
I'm going
to
go.
I got to forget it. And they brought me in the trailer. Security escorted me in, and they're like, did you
security?
Yeah, and they kept bringing it. Oh, because they're like, rewinding it. Forget it.
15 years ago, that was, you would be an FCC violation.
Yeah, so I was never invited back. Ever.
That's a good story. Yeah. Here, talk about panicking because your material has been ripped away from you for one reason or another.
Yeah.
Do you know Jordan Rubin?
Of course. I love Jordan Rubin.
Oh, I love Jordan's swell. Ultimate hipster.
By the way, he is the only reason that I wrote the feature.
I was just going to say, that's what he, yeah, right.
Because he used to live a block away from me. I used to live downtown L.A., and he told me, he was raving about this book, Save the Cat, you got to get this. I had a buddy that just sold a screenplay, and then he's like, I'm writing this, I'm going to sell this, I'm going to get this made. I was like, oh, okay. And I bought it, and like a few months later, I called him, like, I think this is right. That book got me to write Sullivan and Son. And I went back to it again when I was writing the opening act, the feature film. So I owe it all to Jordan Rubin. I actually texted him about that.
He's a great guy, talented. He's one of the funniest. Yeah, he's a great fella. Well, super hip. You know, like he's got that pale gray flesh, and he weighs about 93 pounds. But just sits on his cell phone, and women love him.
Women love him. He's got more celebrity friends than.
It's very weird. Yeah.
He introduced me to John Hamm, and I'm at this party one time, this Emmys party. This is how good-looking John Hamm is, okay? So if you think I'm good, I mean, this guy is, you look at him, you're
I know Hamm. I walk by. I never knew. When I met him for a year, I didn't know he was considered to be a super handsome guy. I didn't know.
He's a stunning human being.
I didn't realize. No, I'm impervious to some guy's charms. Like, I know Tom Brady is handsome and Cam Newton is handsome. I never knew that John Hamm was handsome until people told me so.
Then you see him and you're like, I'm going to sue my parents. This guy is a different species.
He's a strap. Fella too,
very very yeah. Good. He looks like Superman. Mm-hmm. I think if you,
he'd be a good. He would have been a good Batman, right?
He'd have been a great Batman. Square jaw, all that stuff. We're at this Emmy's party, and my buddy's standing next to me, and he knows John Hamm, but I met John through Jordan before. But anyways, John Hamm comes walking up, and there's five of us, right? There's like three girls, me, my buddy, and John Hamm. So John Hamm comes over, and he's talking to my buddy, and they're having a nice conversation. And we're all just sitting there like, it's John Hamm. He's a handsome guy. So my buddy gets pulled away from something. Now John Hamm is stuck with three girls and me, and he doesn't know anybody. So, you know, there's just that moment where he's like, he's going to walk away in about 3 seconds. And he just looks at us and he goes, well, I got to take a and he walks away. And I'm standing there. I'm like, I'm just like, holy,
can't get away with that. That's crazy. A certain person. Right.
And these three girls go, oh, my God, he's so hot. I was like, he just said he has to take a it's crazy.
Oh, man,
that's how good looking he is.
I know. And now he has a Stanley Cup. He's over the moon about it.
I'm happy for the Blues, though.
I'm happy for the Blues as well. Certainly better than the Bruins getting
class of 67.
Yeah, I was pleased. Yeah, I was happy for a lot of people in St. Louis who have suffered for a long time. This whole decade, everybody, the sports gods, awfully generous this decade, making everything right.
Not to
I
Vegas.
Don't like seeing the Capitals getting one, you know.
Well, I don't mind seeing Ovechkin, because I think it's great for the rivalry. Like, so many Pittsburghs are like, I want the Browns to just, no, you want them to kind of win. You want them to be good, because I want that.
They're not our rival, though.
Once they
win, then they become our actual rival. But they are gum on our shoe to date. The Ravens are our rival.
Now, yeah.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
The Capitals, I would have been fine if they'd never won a Stanley Cup. Because until they did, they were the Bengals. You know, they were the Bengals. They think they're our rival. We laugh at you. You don't ever beat us. Rivalry connotes that there's like a back and forth going on over the decades. There's only a back. You guys aren't doing anything.
I was going to Kent State when the trucks came and took everything. And I just remember all these guys like, what the f-? They just left, and that Believe Land documentary, I think, is so good because it really gets to the heartbreak of that city. And I remember seeing it firsthand from everybody on my floor in Clark Hall at Kent State. Just like, you know, it was like before things were trending on Twitter. Just people were just like out in the hallway talking, like, "What the f- just happened? Did they seriously just leave?"
You know what? By the way, I know we have already spent a good deal of time praising the greatness of Pittsburgh, but that shows the greatness. Was that, you would think a lot of teams in the same division who've played head-to-head over and over, but Pittsburgh actually marched for the Browns. People went out on the streets and said, "Bring the put the Browns back or give them their team." A lot of fan bases wouldn't do that. I'll tell you this. Jordan Rubin is one of those guys. He would listen to me and Sal. The cousin Sal,
yeah.
Big star in TV now himself, and Kevin Hench, our mutual pal. We'd sit around and talk about sports and Corolla at the Man Show, and Jordan would feel left out, and he came to me one day and he said, like, give me just a couple things that I can throw in so I can feel like a part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And so I told him, like, just bring up, like, well, I'm going to bring up guys who are great hitters but great home run hitters.
Yeah.
And I say, you bring up Dave Kingman. Just bring, like, hey, you know what? You know, people forget about is Dave Kingman, man. He hit some of the longest home runs ever.
Yeah.
And Jordan said, like, yeah, guys, don't forget about David Kingman. And I'm like, oh, man, when you call him David, that throws like that shows you don't know who he is. Like, he couldn't handle the subtle details.
Yeah.
What happened to him, though, was on Kilbourne, Adam Carolla just so happened to be the first guest that night.
Right.
Jordan was doing his first national stand-up on the Kilbourne show later on. And Carolla sits down with Kilbourne, and he's like, funny coincidence. You got Jordan Rubin. He works on the Man Show with me now. He's like, yeah, he's really excited back there. Like, here's the 5 minutes he's going to do. And he told Jordan's entire five
no,
minutes.
No, what? Carolla. Are you serious?
Did Jordan's act for Kilbourne?
No.
And it's like, that's super funny. I would run out and murder him. I'd be like, listen, I know it's a funny thing, but you know what? Now I must murder you. What would you do? What do you
his
do?
First TV set.
And Jordan is still like, if you bring it up to him, is vaguely amused by it. I'm like, that is not funny at all. I mean, it's funny.
God.
It's funny in theory, but if it happened to you, it wouldn't be funny at all.
That's brutal.
Your first national.
I mean,
what do you do?
That's not, yeah. Did Carolla, like, take him out afterwards for a steak dinner or something, or make it up? Or
made him tough.
Ribbing your...
Toughened him up a little. He didn't talk... As a matter of fact, Carolla, the first time I met him, we were watching football,
and there were a total of 5 human beings in the room.
Yeah.
For 7 hours watching football, he did not make eye contact or speak to me or Hench the entire 7 hours. There are 5 people in a couch and 2 chairs watching football. A year or 2 later, I recalled that and said, why, what really, what was the thought behind that? Was so rude. Why did you do that to us? Are you that bad? It's like, nah, it was a test. You know, it was your probationary period. You should be flattered because you came through clean. You know, most people don't make it. See, I like you. So now I'm talking to you.
He's an old school kind of guy. That's what I think about him. But I love his documentaries are awesome.
He is as lightning fast. Fast with and with those the thing I always say about Carolla is there are a lot of funny people that I've crossed paths with, but I have never met anybody who, without having considered it previously, there are people who can come up with a funny joke. I'm holding a red pen. Hey, what do you think about red pens? There are a lot of funny people who can come up with a quip about that. He can do 20 minutes on it.
He'll just
off the top of his head. It is crazy.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest things that came out of that whole camp, especially Kimmel's camp, was Windy City Heat.
Oh, yeah.
Literally one of my favorite films of all time. I know you got your Citizen Kane, you got your gun. I mean, for just pure put it in and just laugh your ass off, I've seen that more times than probably the film I'm working on now, and I've seen that probably 1,000 times. Bought it for friends.
Funny
I've
people sent it hold to friends. That up. Yeah, funny people all get how hysterically funny that picture is.
It is so... You couldn't plan it any better.
Have you ever seen that spaghetti, Windy City Heat? I encourage you. Nay, demand you go dig it up. You'll cackle with it. Also, make sure you do that, but don't do that before you go and see.
That's right.
Always Amazing, the documentary about the amazing Jonathan. I'll be honest with you. I'm not one of these late night guys who's like, I haven't seen it yet because they didn't like it much. I legitimately have not seen it yet.
Yeah.
And that's because of 4 children, not anything else.
Yes.
So I hope you take no offense to that. I will watch it at my earliest convenience. I can't wait to do that, and I'm looking forward to the opening act coming out soon. But whether I watch it or not, Always Amazing is burning it up on the internets, and mazel tov to you.
Thank you.
And thank you for making the time, and I hope we'll cross paths sooner rather than later, and we're going to get Billy Gardell in here. Maybe we could get like a whole Pittsburgh thing going again.
I would love that if Billy Gardell and I, by the way, in the opening,
ooh, maybe
act,
we could get Bill Burr in here and you could try out some of them them Ty Domi fight techniques on him.
That would be great. Anything with any of the Billies.
Who wins that fight, you or Burr?
I don't know.
Spaghetti. I mean, what do you think?
I did his podcast recently and we were talking about a lot of my fights. Because I've been in...
Oh, you've been in a lot of fights.
I've been scrapping.
You don't strike me as a guy who'd be throwing down a lot.
Yeah, I don't mind scrapping. Those days are gone now. I mean, ever since I turned like in my late 30s, I'm like, I got to stop doing this.
Huh.
But I would definitely... I got in a fight at a Comedy Store. I got in a fight... This is the greatest fight I've ever been in.
How many fights can you get into?
Burr...
Your line of work shouldn't require a lot of throwing down, should it?
Because Burr would hear about him like in New York and stuff, so he knew. So I don't think Burr has been in as many as I have, but I don't know. He definitely has a rageful side to him that I'm sure anybody could appreciate. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I'm going to take you now based on that. You're more athletic, right?
This is the best fight I've ever been in. This is the greatest fight. And I think this is one of the best. Like, there's 2 things I've done on the road as a stand-up comedian that I don't think anybody will ever do again. I made somebody shit their pants during my show because they were laughing so hard. That happened in Sacramento, California. There's
Muzzle
a plaque
time.
Made. Colin Jost made me a plaque. It's on my Instagram. You can see it. I did it again in Canada.
Wow.
In Calgary. Somebody shit their pants. And then
one time might be a fluke, but not twice.
No. I repeated.
Yeah.
Back to back. So I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I was with another comic, and we met these girls after the show. We go back to the hotel. We're swimming in the pool. Have a great time. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to walk these girls back to the elevator. He's like, I'm done. I'm going to stay in my room. I was like, okay. So I'm going to catch up with the girls, and the girls are in the elevator. Now, they're in the elevator. Now, there's a guy holding the door open and 4 of his buddies behind him. And there are 5 black guys that'll be pertinent to the story. So the guy is asking the girl for her number. She's like, I'm not giving you my number. And he's like, come on, give me your number. We can hang out. She's like, I'm not giving my number. So I see this, and I'm kind of walking up to him. I'm like, oh, God, this is uncomfortable. So I go under his arm, and I kind of pop up. I'm like, gentlemen, I don't blame you for hitting on great girls, but let's call it a night, huh? Let's have a good night here. And, this guy is absolutely ignoring me. He's pulling a Corolla on me. He's ignoring me. He's just looking at her, and he's holding the door open. He's like, you're going to give me my number. She's like, I'm not giving you my number. He's like, don't you want this bling? Can't you handle this bling? She's like, I don't want your bling. I don't want to, you're not getting my, just let the doors close. And he will not let it close. And then she goes, I'm not giving you my number, you. And then she drops the N-bomb.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, no. So now he comes in the door, right? The door's shut, and he grabs me.
I was just going to say, well, now you're culpable.
So I'm in the thing, okay? So the door's shut. She backs off in a corner. The girl, the other friend holds her, thinking they're the guys. I'm grabbing him. Again, I played hockey. I assume this black guy didn't play hockey, right?
With five guys.
So I pull his shirt over his head, and I'm dropping him.
I don't agree with what she said, by the way, yeah, but you challenged me physically, and I have no choice but to fight back.
It's kind of how I felt. So I'm just like, I'm going for broke. It's a small space. I'm like, if I get down on the ground, I'm done for. So I gotta just keep peppering him. So I'm like, bang, bang, bang. And I go, are you done? Are you done? He goes, chill, dog, chill. I go, are you done? Are you done? He goes, chill, dog, chill. I go, are you done? He goes, I'm done. I'm done. So during this fracas, right, the elevator stops. We push the
too
elevator
much
off its
did
track.
It, right.
Yeah. So we are stuck now. He gets up. He pulls his shirt over his head. I remember Sarah Smiles by Hall & Oates was playing in the elevator.
Perfect.
Speaker. So every time I hear that song, I think of this memory. So these two girls are crying. This guy has his shirt, pulls it over his head. He's a little bruised up. I'm sitting there like, all right, this guy's going to hit me again at any second, you know? And he's looking at me, and then I'm kind of looking at him like, this is so messed up. And he's looking at me. He's not saying anything, but he's just staring at me. He goes, were you on BET's Comic View? I go, yeah. He goes, you do the Bruce Lee bit? I go, yeah. He goes, you're a comic? I go, yeah. He goes, man, I seen your set. It was really good stuff. I'm like, thanks, man. Thanks, buddy. So all of a sudden we hear, and the doors go back up. You know, the elevator's working again. The doors open, and these guys heard it all go down. So they just rush in, and they pummel me. I'm getting pop, 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 rip shirt. And he goes,
like, no. I saw him do a great 20 minutes the other night.
He goes, no. This guy, he's a comedian. He did the Bruce Lee bit. He's at the improv this week. We should go check him out. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So that was like my greatest fight story.
Ah, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's surreal and hard to fathom. The only thing that would make it better is if the elevator had been stuck for like an hour, and then you guys just had to like get to know each other,
and then we wrote rush hour.
Two girls.
Yeah.
That's excellent. All right, one more time. Always Amazing, the documentary about the amazing Jonathan, a crazy life, and documented by our new pal here, Steve Byrne. And then be on the lookout for the opening act. What else can you plug? Where else can people see you?
I'll
fight you in elevators if they say
fight me in an elevator for sure. Everything I have is Steve Byrne Live. Twitter, Steve Byrne Live. Instagram, Steve Byrne Live. And all my tour dates always go up there. So I'm actually going to be doing Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club in September in Vegas. So
I hear it's really cool. I hear it looks like his living room.
I'm really excited. Like his living room?
His actual living room in his home. I don't even get the spirit behind that. You were there, Spaghetti, right?
I thought it was his basement, but yeah. Yeah, it's right.
It's pretty cool, though.
Is that the Link? Yeah.
The Link is a cool area. I like it. Yeah.
His basement?
Yeah, that's what I was
okay.
Told.
Yeah, supposedly the detail is, I listened to him on Stern talking about it, and he said that it's an exact replica with freakish detail.
That's how much he appreciates creating the ambience of comedy by saying, you know what, I've made it. I probably got three homes and a vacation home, but you comics are going to perform in my basement. So thank you, Jimmy.
It's a dig. I didn't put two and two together. You're right. Exactly right.
But I'm excited to get out there. I've heard good things about it.
Oh, yeah. Have a great time and go check out Steve Byrne, and you'll have a great time as you just listened to here. Oh, wait, Spaghetti, stop the music. Our new game over the last month is I Have No Sense for Time. I feel like I was hoping that we could get with you know, your consideration, maybe 25, 35 minutes.
Sure.
I'm going to guess that today we have spoken for
at least an hour, right?
56 minutes.
Are we going to the minute?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 62.
That when the guest guesses higher than what I guess, I take that as a dig, like that they were bored. Like, no, like all right, let's wrap this up. We went well over that. Trust me, it was a lot more than 56 minutes, you know?
We're almost at an hour 14.
So I was, you bid the $1 on The Price is Right, but I went a little higher.
That's
and
right.
I won.
That's exactly right. You won.
Time flies when you're talking 66.
Listen.
87.
Could do it. What if we would have landed on 66?
Oh.
You should have stopped us. That's on the producer. I blame you. You should have really been had your eye out
That's
for that.
That's fair. I'll take it.
All right. Try to be better next time. All right. Now play the music, please. All right. So, Eddie, for Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass, and, of course, for Steve Byrne, steveburn.com. Steve Byrne Live, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Is how you track down everything, including the picture look on YouTube, all things comedy. And we'll look forward to crossing paths with you soon, pal.
Absolutely. Thank
you. All right. We'll talk to you later. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. Thin slice of heaven.